I'm Dime Roberts, stage and studio. You're listening to music from the film version of Secret Love in Peach Blossom Land. Playwright and director Stan Lai adapted his play to create this film in 1992. Since 1986, Lai has worked on many versions of this play, as well as 30 others, adapting and creating his improv style of developing new theatrical works. But Secret Love in Peach Blossom Land is his most popular, with more than 1,000 unauthorized productions in China. His first professional production of this play in America opened last month at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. This American-born Taiwanese playwright is in great demand in China right now, and he spends much of his time directing his plays in both China and Taiwan. On this edition of Station Studio, I feature Stan Lai. I talked with him in Ashland, Oregon on the opening weekend of Secret Love in Peach Blossom Land. I asked him if he had to meld his process more to work at OSF.
Oh yeah, because at OSF, I think it's a big learning curve for me as an artist from Asia, where we have no unions. We can debate whether that's good or bad, but I think artistically, I'm at more freedom to, ironically, I think I'm at more freedom to do a lot of experimentation, to waste a lot of time in the rehearsal room. And the wasted time is never really wasted. It just looks wasted. And in my own environment, I can pretty much go beyond the hours that we, you know, if I said rehearsal goes to 10 and it really goes to 12, you know, no one will mind. The actors will enjoy the fact that we're really getting something done at 11:30 at night, etc. It's a lot of things are different. And here at OSF, I also enjoy the benefits of being so regulated, you know, by the rotating repertory and by the unions and everything. But at the same time, sometimes frustrated because I don't know. I don't think it's the optimal way. I mean, I'm not against unions, but to consider an actor as the same kind of worker as other professions, I think the actor is an artist. You know, it's different to really regulate people in the arts. I guess that's what I want to say. Yeah.
Well, I can understand that. I mean, if you think about in terms of, say, a visual artist, you're not going to be, you know, I'm sorry, you have to quit painting right now because, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you get inspired, right? And you want to keep working while you can. So I totally get that.
And inspiration doesn't work on office hours, you know. So, yeah, so when it comes, and you can't really regulate that.
Did you feel like you had to compromise too much? I mean, or was there a lot of give and take?
Because the play is already written, so I'm very confident in that. But it's just that a lot of the adaptation has to be done with the actors. And using my own methods, it's very foreign to the way everything works here at OSF, which is pretty regimented, and people expect a director to come in and pretty much sort of tell them what to do, you know, and that's not my style. My style is for the actor to find what to do, you know, and I think the actor individually, in researching and thinking and deep thinking about the work, figuring out what it's about, that's the way I work.
You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dime Roberts. If you missed any of the show, you can visit stageandstudio.org. I'm talking with Stan Lai at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival about his newest adaptation of Secret Love in Peach Blossom Land, which runs until October 31st at OSF in Ashland. You can find out more about it at osfashland.org. You can also read my extensive feature piece on Stan Lai for Oregon Arts Watch, and you can do that by visiting artswatch.org. As a director, Stan Lai not only had to adapt his style of working to fit the OSF professional schedules, but he worked closely with Bill Rausch, OSF's artistic director, to adapt his play with a multiracial cast. Rausch is used to the emotional discussions that can occur when what is usually a monoracial play is adapted into one with multiple races, but Rausch says this work was an important one to bring to OSF.
The intersection of race and culture and caste is a very dangerous, fraught, emotional one for everybody involved. And, you know, we took risks and we took leaps, and the actors who accepted roles took risks and leaps. And, you know, I've been part of a lot of difficult and really rich conversations throughout this whole process. with individuals and with the cast as a whole. But I'm really proud. I'm proud of everybody for committing to telling the story the way that Stan envisioned it, that the way he wanted the U.S. professional premiere to land. And I'm proud and grateful to everybody. You know, I think that for all the incredible international exchanges and international work that happens in the American theater, that there's so much within our own rich culture to explore and within our own American culture that it's hard sometimes to carve out the space to look at stories from other parts of the world. But I think for us in particular, as a large-scale classical theater, we have to expand our definition of what we mean by classical, and that it's not just the European classics, it's not just the American classics, but it's classics from traditions around the world.
Stan Lee's production of Secret Love in Peach Blossom Land has three different storylines. One part of the play is set in 1949, when mainland Chinese came to Taiwan after the Civil War in China. The other story is set in the mythical land of Peach Blossom and features a fisherman whose wife is cheating on him. There is also a modern storyline of two different companies producing these two different plays who are double booked on the same OSF stage. Stan Lee embraced the multiracial casting to tell the more contemporary storylines of this production.
Well, we did go through a lot of dialogue with Bill, and we made our choices. And as Bill said, there were risky choices to be made, but I think we made them with all of the discussion and all of the combined wisdom of the minds that were in the discussions. And I think we've come out with something that is, I think, very interesting.
Did you have a lot to say in the casting?
Oh, yeah. I was able to meet and actually audition most of the people that were in the show, yes.
So that, you know, so there was that attention to detail that I guess made you comfortable, even with the shorter rehearsal time.
Very much so. And the shorter rehearsal time, well, working with all professional actors and on the level that they're at, you know, it's I found time in the end was okay. I think we had enough time to do it.
I loved how you actually had references to the multiracial casting in the more modernized version of the plays that are presented. And it was almost like you were reading my mind, because I was starting to think critically, like, oh, that's this way and that way. And then uh-huh. You made references to it. Was it a preemptive strike in some ways?
Kind of. I think, yeah. I think we set it up for it to be discussed in the play. So we set up the multiracial casting so that it would be an issue. And it would be an issue for is that we could take up, particularly at OSF, which is, I think, very famous for or notorious for the multi and actually the inclusivity of the casting.
Because there are times that, you know, even here, there are cringeworthy, I call them cringeworthy moments. Mm-hmm. There have been times in the past, like for Throne of Blood, when Ping Chong did it, and you see only two Asian actors and the rest are wearing samurai outfits, and you kind of go, you know. And then there's another time when there was White Snake, and just getting used to the fact that there are white actors in the dress, you know, in the traditional dress. I think they ride a really fine line,
yeah.
You know, in what they're presenting to make it okay to mainstream audiences, and then what the ethnicities might particularly think about it.
Well, you know, something that may sound shocking to you is in my conversation with Bill Rausch throughout, as it's been a very prolonged conversation about casting policies and everything, I told him, you know, for an ethnic Chinese like myself and many, many other directors, to have someone from another cultural or another race perform their play or whatever, in a way it's something that you would feel proud about, instead of saying, you know, this is not something that would be negative. Yeah, it's, and Bill said, I've never heard that. Explain that for me. And I said, okay, because we come from a weaker political entity. We're a very weak political entity coming from Taiwan, and even from China, which is being bashed all over the world. It's weak politically on the world, on the international stage. So for, let's say, people from, let's say, European American to perform, or Latino to perform or anyone, African American to perform in our plays, that is a way of saying that the superpower is actually bowing down to us
Or you think of it in terms of honoring.
Totally honoring and respecting our culture and our weak political entity, you see? And so to have people from different race perform a contemporary Chinese play, this is an honor, you see? So like when Domingo did The First Emperor at the Metropolitan Opera, I didn't hear anybody say, oh, why isn't he Asian, you know, or why? And when you say, why isn't he Asian, these are questions that I don't quite understand, is that, hey, wait a minute, I feel there's a huge difference between, you know, Chinese and Japanese and Korean and Vietnamese and Thai. How can you just use Asian as an umbrella to say all of these things? And then you have a mixed Asian cast. To me, is the same as having a mixed racial cast, period.
Well, you may comment on that even in Secret Love.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. Yes, that's what we're doing.
You made that comment.
Yeah.
Directly,
yes,
about that.
I did.
And that is a good point. I think it's also the differences between Asian national and then Asian American,
right.
You know?
Oh, yes,
because
yes, yes,
from the Asian American perspective, you know, we all have to kind of group together because there are so few, and you know, and so it's a political decision.
And that is something that I've become much more sensitive to this time at OSF and much more appreciative of. So I'm getting it, you know, I'm understanding more, and I'm realizing that if I can be of any help or benefit to the Asian American community, that's where my energies must go.
And you're right, it's a fluid discussion,
mm-hmm,
and it's going to be changing, and what we say today is not going to be the same even a year from now, you know?
Yes, and even though people may say, why did you have a multiracial cast for your play, my answer is, well, I've got 5 Asian actors on stage here at OSF, and that is unprecedented.
I'm Dimae Roberts, stage and studio, talking with playwright and director Stan Lai about its new production at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival in Ashland. One of the actors on stage is Eugene Ma, who also happens to be the only Chinese actor in Secret Love in Peach Blossom Land. He plays the fisherman role in the classical Peach Blossom storyline. Ma found it fascinating to work with Stan Lai. He was the only actor who also speaks Chinese and was able to dissect the differences in humor in Chinese and English.
Because Stan has his own company and he usually works with, you know, his vocabulary, and he's very specific in what he wants in each moment, the movement, how I say a line, you know. In American theater, I rarely get line readings, but on this project, you know, he's so specific what to hit, how you hit it, and how I do that movement on that line. Whereas in English language theater, usually it's like line and then hit, but because there is still the essence of that Chinese-ness, which Chinese is like, you call this booze, whatever. In Chinese, you would just hit, you call this booze, and you hit on that line. But in English, usually, you call this booze, and then you hit, right? To have a director so familiar with the material, it's so insane, right? Because he brings with him not only a long-running show for almost 30 years, but it's the history of the evolution of the multiple productions and also the movie. And then there were all these unauthorized productions, right, that he has knowledge of. And it's an amalgam of all of them that informs him to what this production can be. But also, this is not just a translation of this legendary play in Asia, right? This is a fresh adaptation because it's the first professional English premiere of this work that's completely adapted for this culture.
Actor Eugene Ma. Stan Lai also makes a point of highlighting his homeland, Taiwan, in the play. In one moment in Secret Love in Peach Blossom Land, an actor confuses Taiwan with Thailand, which gets an unexpected groan from the audience. Though Lai writes about Chinese mainlanders' experience who came to Taiwan after 1949, his work is equally loved by both Taiwan and China. I asked him if he's had any criticism from Taiwanese pre-1949 for highlighting mainlanders who came to Taiwan with a nationalist government that imposed several decades of martial law.
No, never, because this is part of our heritage in Taiwan. This is a play about Taiwan, but this is a play about a mainlander experience in Taiwan, which is a totally legitimate thing. If you were to criticize and say you should write more about the non-mainlanders, that's a different discussion, because Secret Love in Peach Blossom Land is what it is. Yeah.
I mean, it is about the mainlanders, right?
And yeah, this particular mainlander married a native Taiwanese woman, Right.
And that was my little bone to pick because I was going, why does she have a Spanish accent, you know? Spoiler, but, you know, and then you made a joke of it, and I appreciate that. But that was, I was writing my notes like, I could understand why she sounds like, you know.
Yeah.
Only Taiwanese character,
yeah.
You know.
You need a little patience on that, and I thank you for that, because then it gets revealed, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, oh, okay. So I guess what I'm asking you then is, for a lot of Taiwanese, the mainlander experience was not a positive one. And forgive me, I tried to find if the rest of your plays dealt with the white terror, mm-hmm. you know, aspect of that experience. And I don't know if, have you
one
had
in
any?
Particular,
okay,
one in
tell
particular,
me about that play.
Well, yeah. I think as a writer, we write about what we see, what we're concerned about in the world, in our lives, around us. I happen to come from a mainland family. Meaning my parents didn't go to Taiwan until 1949, as opposed to families that had been there for 100 years or 200 years or whatever, and who speak a different dialect, which would be Hokkienese, or we would call it Taiwanese. And I think there are plenty of writers, playwrights, who are dealing with that experience. I find my hands totally full with the mainlander experience, because it's such a rich story to tell about all these displaced people, and certainly there was a lot of tension and conflict between the Taiwanese and the mainlanders who came in 1949 as a defeated army, but as sort of like a conqueror, you see. So how conflicting is that? And then also to inflict pain upon the native Taiwanese in intelligentsia in particular, which is an incredible story of how some of the really most elite people that were there before 1949 were targeted and eliminated. It's really terrible. And of course, my heart goes to all of the families that were involved in that terror. But at the same time, I'm closer to the suffering of the mainlanders, the people who, oddly, ironically, the people who inflicted the terror, but it wasn't they. It was the government. It was the authorities who did that. The people, they have such a story to tell about how they came to Taiwan and then how they always thought they would be going home. My play from 2008 called The Village is one of these plays that deals with a military dependence village in the south of Taiwan. And it's become probably one of the most popular plays of the last decade. But it speaks of simple people in simple situation, but they're all from the mainland, and they all want to go home.
Do you have any Taiwanese in the play, too?
Oh, yeah. Okay. We have Taiwanese in the play. But in the village, and one of the main characters marries a Taiwanese woman, which also is very common, and which you see in Secret Love in Peach Blossom Land. And that character is one of the most well-loved of the characters in the play. It's quite an interesting, it's a three-hour play. It's, people call it an epic, and then when they finally do get home, some of them do get home 40 years later, it's the same story as Secret Love in Peach Blossom Land, but told from a different perspective. There's so many surprises when they get home, because in Secret Love in Peach Blossom Land, it doesn't get to that point.
I guess that character who in Secret Love, who was Taiwanese, her rejection by her husband, and then eventually, you know, he came,
right.
You know, I don't want to spoil it, but and her initial rejection, is she symbolic of how conflicted the mainlanders felt about being there in Taiwan?
For sure. In fact, there's so many symbolic things in the play that you don't have to get if you're an audience. It doesn't matter. But people really analyzed and dissected Secret Love in Peach Blossom Land from the moment it was performed in 1986. Everyone was saying, well, where is the Peach Blossom Land? Is it Taiwan or is it China? You know, is it now or is it in some past, some glorious past? What is the author trying to say? You know, and so by saying that two theater groups have mistakenly booked the same theater for a dress rehearsal and they cannot find the theater manager, what kind of a political statement is that about the China-Taiwan situation? You know, and I'm sitting there sort of kind of chuckling, saying, wow, are you guys overanalyzing this or what? But I also acknowledge the fact that, sure, of course this stuff is built into the play. And this is something that an American audience probably will not get. And that's okay with me. I think it's How symbolic is Mrs. Jiang? How symbolic is Ying? One is, you know, in the end, who do you go to? You know, the not so ideal to you present, or the totally idealized past, which is not recoverable. You know, what do you choose? You know, and I think this is something very universal.
Well, and speaking of that conflicted feeling, I was in Taiwan studying Chinese in 1979, mm-hmm. and that was at the time when China became recognized in right. the UN, and then, you know, I actually had my passport stolen, and so mm-hmm. there was no U.S. embassy. They all right. cleared out, right. you know. I had wow. to go to Hong Kong wow. to get a passport, and so there was such bad feelings about oh, yeah. China at the time.
Oh, totally.
And America.
Yeah.
yeah. From my perspective, I always felt, you know, from watching that, witnessing that, and having relatives still there, that they really don't want to be part of mainland China for the most part mm-hmm. as a country. They want to be recognized Republic of China as mm-hmm. its own country mm-hmm. and have its own seat in the UN. How do you feel about all that?
It's complicated. My father being a diplomat from the Republic of China, he passed very early. But I remember that day in 1979 that you're talking about. I was a student at Berkeley, a grad student, but I was also working in a Chinese restaurant in San Francisco. And when the news broke, I was literally holding plates, you know, to be served. And I said, what the? So I actually, with my wife, we actually got all these posters and plastered Berkeley with all these, you know, protests, you know, and everything. Those were the days. It's complicated, you know. It's like at this stage, I see how Taiwan has evolved into a full democracy and how it's harder and harder to talk about reunification with the mainland because the systems are different and are becoming more and more different. At the same time, I'm also seeing the deficiencies in the Taiwanese democratic development, which in a way is normal and natural, because America took 200 years to get to where it is now, and there's still lots of things you can talk about that are not totally that you would agree with. But in Taiwan, we have lots of problems, I think, particularly with the media, how the media is no longer into journalism, how most of the top stories of the day are taken from YouTube, which is, I think, for a normal journalist, that would be total taboo. You know, you, how could you do that? How could you get your source from the internet? But I think 80% of the news in Taiwan now is sourced from the internet, which is really, you know, degrading yourself. And therefore, I think the Taiwanese perspective on the world has also become limited, strangely, because we do have one of the freest medias in the world. But because of that freedom, this is just my own opinion, I think the Taiwanese view of the world has become smaller. So what to do in the future? I think most people for many, many years and decades thought the status quo would be the best way, which is, you don't recognize us, okay. The world doesn't recognize us, okay. We're Taiwan. We're survivors. We fight. And you say the world doesn't have, you know, diplomatic relations with us, but the Taiwanese passport today can go to over 100 countries without a visa. You can just go, you know. So it's an incredibly amazing story. And we have offices everywhere that are de facto, they're embassies, you know, and they're consulates. You can get your visas to, if you want to go to Taiwan, there's always a representative available. And at the same time, the bonus is we travel to China with a different travel document. For me, I'm just as home there, because the language is the same. People respond to my work the same. And it's just amazing. If in Taiwan I would have a tour of 3 or 4 cities and that was it, that was all of Taiwan. But now a play of mine can tour for maybe 50 cities in China. So it's quite a difference.
Well, so it's a good time for you, and it's a good time for Taiwan, it sounds like, too.
It's a good time. I think Taiwan has evolved into really a beautiful place. The people are naturally, because of the previous, the ethnic Chinese, and then actually the 50 years of rule by Japan, has made us into an interesting blend of we have the politeness. It's like, I think in Taiwan now, I find the Buddhist and Taoist and Christian, the religious freedom has made Taiwan a very a very compassionate place. People are genuinely nice, and that is what really makes the place special, is the people. Most of my work was originated in Taiwan, and I really appreciate the artistic freedom that, the total artistic freedom that Taiwan has given me. Actually, I started working in the 80s under martial law, so I know what that's about. Secret Love in Peach Blossom Land was written under martial law. In fact, it wouldn't have made it through the censors unless we did some interesting things to doctor the script, and we didn't perform the same script that we submitted, you know. So I've been through that too. You know, I've been through through the age of censorship, and then I've been through the age of anything goes. You can do anything in Taiwan, and I've found that as an artist, then you have to respect that freedom. You have a responsibility that comes with the freedom, and what are the stories that are most important to tell? And I've kind of come to a point in my life where I'm no longer telling stories of specific places anymore, but stories of the human heart and soul. I've been developing a project for years that still hasn't been performed about stories from Buddhism, and this would not be anywhere in a specific locale, perhaps done in the way that my play A Dream Like a Dream has been done, which is with the audience in the center and then the play revolving around it. That's something that I developed, and I really hope to develop more in other productions.
That was playwright and director Stan Lai, whose work Secret Love in Peach Blossom Land runs through October 31st at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. For more info, visit osfashland.org, and you can call them at 1-800-219-8161. That's 1-800-219-8161. And you can read my feature story on Stan Lai at Oregon Arts Watch at orartswatch.org. With Stan Lai's play comes an increased commitment by OSF to produce more Asian American productions in the future. The 2016 season will feature Viet Gong by Ki Nguyen, and it's directed by May Andralis, who directed Chinglish last year at Portland Center Stage. And there's also a version of Shakespeare's The Winter's Tale set in dynastic China and the American West, and that's directed by Seattle's Desdemona Chang. OSF is also hosting the National Asian American Theater Conference and Festival in the fall of 2016. And you can find out more about that at osfashland.org. That's it for Stage and Studio. You can find links at stageandstudio.org, where you can see photos and a podcast of this interview. And you can also download shows at iTunes. And don't forget to like us on facebook.com/stage_studio or tweet me at @stage_studio. Till next time, I'm Demi Roberts.